One man can change the world with a bullet in the right place.
Welcome back to the podcast.
Who the hell do you think you are?
My name is Max Fowlis. Give it up for me, goddammit. Welcome back to another wonderful episode of the Movie Crew Podcast. We are happy to have you, and by me... And we, I mean this guy.
Who the fuck is that guy?
The BBR Bagman. Sir, how are you?
Good evening.
And I see you have brought some friends with you this time.
I left the door open and let the riffraff in.
No, that's for sure.
Who's that peeking in my window, sir?
This is our good friend Darwin from Battle Arms Development.
Yeah. Hey, guys, how you
this
doing?
Is Darwin from Battle Arms Development.
Give it up for Darwin. Thanks for being
Thank
here,
you,
sir.
Guys. Thank you. It's good to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
So the big thing that we took away from that was the videos with your OIP in full auto, stuffing it with 60-round mags and drums and just trying to burn it out. And sucker did not want to move, which just won't come off target.
Yeah. Yeah, that thing's pretty amazing, the way it's designed, the way it functions. And, you know, honestly, that was the third weekend, the third event in a row, 3 weekends in a row. And that thing, I hadn't had a chance to really clean it. So you were seeing a gun that was, you know, pretty well used, behaving really, really extraordinarily well, especially for what we were putting it through.
And the fact that it's like sub 4 pounds is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's actually just over 4 pounds, but I mean, it's featherweight. It really feels like nothing. In fact, that's just why it's so shocking that it doesn't move while you shoot it, even while dumping a 100-round drum magazine. The gun just doesn't care. It just lays flat.
Absolutely stayed flat. Yeah, the muzzle brake did a great job mitigating that recoil and just eating it up. And the fact that it's as light as it is and doesn't budge was really cool.
Oh, I was gonna say a lot of that comes from the you know, we use that titanium bolt carrier, so the reciprocating mass is so light compared to your average AR-15 that the way we've designed the proprietary buffer that we use in there, and the way we ultimately have to gas the system with you know, such a recoil system, it really it lends to really soft shooting, you know, flat shooting. And also great suppress shooting, because you don't really get gas in the face as much when you suppress it. And that's a real nice feature.
So what's the secret in the sauce in the gas system?
Well, you know, when the bolt carrier group is that lightweight, you know, the bolt carrier being made out of titanium, you don't have to do any skeletonization of the bolt carrier. So it's really strong. It's extremely lightweight. We have a really cool, simple, yet very effective buffer design that we use. So, you know, the secret is basically we don't have to gas that gun very hard to get it to essentially cycle any type of 5.56, even, you know, even your old steel case stuff that's, you know, maybe not as powerful. It'll cycle it just fine with really minimum gas compared to, you know, your standard AR-15.
You keeping up with all this, Max?
Yeah. No gas, all brakes, or yeah, something like that. No, it's actually making sense. Being that this was my first time shooting with a suppressor, I could see how the gas plays such a major role in not only the functionality of the gun, but the functional, well, not the functionality, but, you know, the handle and the feel. And I keep hearing about how light the gun is. Has it been researched? Is this the lightest gun on the market?
You know, I doubt it. I bet there's people who have skeletonized guns beyond, you know, what you should skeletonize them to. And, you know, I've seen people use aluminum bolt carriers or, you know, heavily skeletonized bolt carriers. The thing about the OIP is that it was made to be a duty gun for executive protection guys working long hours overseas. So they had to, you know, run for 16, 17, 18 hours at a time, you know, with this gun, with this rifle slung over their shoulders, and they needed something lightweight. But, you know, obviously for the environments that they were working in, particularly in, you know, certain parts of Africa and Afghanistan, they needed something that would, you know, stand up to those environments and run reliably, especially on full auto. And so as a duty gun meant to be used, you know, in that manner, it is most likely the lightest one out there.
So we'll call it the lightest one in its class.
The lightest one in its class. Sure.
There you go.
Lots of carbon fiber and titanium, because, you know, it's not just that bulk carrier. There's a lot of titanium parts in that, you know, right down to the actual grip screw. That thing's titanium as well. So we went all out. No corners were cut.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I'm glad you liked it. It was a lot of fun shooting that gun with you guys. It was a lot of fun hanging out with you guys. You know, the IV8888 event is a fantastic event. And, you know, I was really happy to be there.
Yeah, it was definitely a good one this year. So in a past life, you weren't always into the AR scene. You were very heavy on the AK scene. So since this is new to Pew and this kind of gives you an opportunity to teach Max something new, why don't you discuss not the specifics of your situation, because I know there's some stuff there that we can leave out of the show.
That had to be said.
But why don't you talk to Max about the difference between the operating system of the AR versus the AK
and
how that all plays in?
Well, there's just no way for me to not get myself in trouble here, because you know, so AR guys are going to, you know, they're going to say something, and AK guys, you know, they're going to say something, and so inevitably someone's going to disagree with me. But, you know, the AK is a long stroke gas piston system. And in my opinion, the long stroke gas system is, you know, the long stroke gas piston system is absolutely fantastic, reliable. It's a really great system, you know, versus in my opinion, that system is even better than, dare I say, you know, the direct impingement system of the AR-15. Oh gosh, Eugene Stoner is gonna just like come out of the wood, smack me in the back of the head but anyhow, you know, so, and you know, obviously the AK comes in, you know, it's chambered in different rounds, you know, but traditionally, I really do like the 7.62x39. I always tell people, you know, for me, life starts at 30 caliber. It's a different animal though. You know, the AR-15 is like Legos for adults. And that's really cool, because if you get good parts and put them together and match things up right, you know, you can put together a really nice AR, you know, in your house with, you know, fairly basic tools. An AK is a little bit different. You know, they're really easy to screw up. They're extremely easy to screw up. So you have to have specialized tools. You know, you have to know how to do rivets. When you're talking about, obviously, your stamp receivers, you know, you don't have a barrel nut, you're pressing a barrel. So, you know, how you press a barrel into the trunnion on an AK, it's just, all of it is a really big deal. And that's why I think, you know, you have a really saturated AR-15 market out there with guys who are building ARs at all different price ranges. And, you know, honestly, a lot of them are really good in all price ranges, and a lot of them are reliable, and a lot of them are great for self-defense, no matter, you know, what price point you're coming in. AK is a little bit different. You really have to be picky about, you know, who you get an AK from, because you might get something that beats itself up or it doesn't work very well if you don't go with a really reputable company.
Is it safe to say that the AK internals are more complicated, or to say the system is more complicated than the AR?
Oh no. The AK is rudimentary. It's rudimentary. Okay. You know, I mean, you know, thinking back to, you know, when they started building it, you know, back in 1947, right? AK-47. You know, and the tools and the technology that was you know, available to you know, to the Russians and to Mikhail Kalashnikov. You know, you're talking about, you know, it was built very rudimentary. They, in fact, I believe the original was a milled receiver, and then they later moved to the stamp receiver because of the cost and sort of the time it takes to build the stamp receiver versus milling those receivers. But it's not a very complicated gun at all. When you talk about the parts, it's just the craftsman. It's the craftsman who puts it together. That guy needs to have a lot of skill and understand things about pressing barrels and rivets and, you know, aligning the sights and so on and so forth, because there's a lot of nuances to building an AK, and it is really easy to screw up.
As somebody who's crossed the line from AK over to AR, why do you, in your opinion, why do you think there's such a tastes great, less filling type battle going on between the AR and AK guys? Like, what? Why is Star Trek and Star Wars pitted against each other? Like, why are these two factions fighting?
We just won another round of light beer from Miller.
Yeah, light sure tastes great.
Less filling, tastes great.
You know, I'm sure there's a ton of reasons for it, but my go-to reason is, like, you'll see a lot of people that would never, you know, they don't ever want to own an AK, and they're like, well, that's a commie gun, and you know, so okay. you get
okay.
You know, you get a lot of arguments like that, and you know, a good firearm is a good firearm. It's a great self-defense tool, whether you're shooting an AR or an AK. But I think that consumerism, and you know, stop me if I get a little too nerdy here, but consumerism, you know, there's a lot of people spending a lot of money on, you know, various things, in this case, rifles. And, you know, sometimes we really stretch ourselves to be able to afford the things we want. And when we do buy those things and we are so invested in them, we tend to be offended by any suggestion that, you know, something that we bought isn't the greatest thing, you know, since sliced bread. And so we tend to tie our self-esteem and our emotions to our consumer purchases sometimes way too much. And I don't think that's healthy. You know, as a guy who works for an AR-15 manufacturer right now, I can tell you, you know, I love all the platforms. In fact, you know, people ask me what I think of other companies' AR-15s. And, you know, most of the time I've got nothing but good things to say, because there's just a lot of skilled people out there building these guns. And I just don't feel the need to, you know, to put anyone down just because it's not what I own or anything like that. So, but I think it's mainly that consumerism standpoint where, people stretch themselves a little bit thin and, need to sort of protect their self-esteem.
Yeah. And they, we've talked about that they definitely tie their ego to their purchase and have to defend not so much their purchase, but now their ego.
Yeah.
Because if you're telling them that there's something better out there or something else performs as well as something they've got this deep emotional investment in, yeah, that they really push back on that. That's
yeah. Yeah. And especially here in America, you know, if we're going to LARP around the house, you know, we're going to, you know, the people that we look up to, you know, the whether we're watching television or watching movies, you know, they tend to be, you know, our troops here. And so, you know, the AK has gotten, you know, more and more popular as time has gone on. But as far as, you know, catching up in popularity here in America, I don't really see that happening. You know, this is Eugene Stoner land. The AR is always going to, I think, be, you know, sort of the dominant rifle in that manner. But people are really catching on to what a great platform the AK is, and I'm happy about that, because variety is the spice of life.
Sure.
Yeah. We talked about it in one of our earlier episodes about, you know, guns on TV and in the movies. And I made a point to say, you know, the bad guys always had AKs. And I think that's why Americans don't really like them. It was the Libyan terrorists or the Islamic terrorists, the guys taking over the jet planes, like, they always had AKs. Meanwhile, the special forces guys come in and they got everything from Uzis to ARs. But the AK was like the bad guy's gun all the time. Yeah. Then in the 90s and 2000s, it became like the gangster gun. So it was the police going against the street thugs, and they always had AKs. So
yeah. LARP is the bad guy, you know?
Like, yeah, nobody's put on a shemagh to go clear their house with their you know, with their training rounds inside. It's not. It's definitely. I don't think it's catching up. You know, I think the ARs had too much of a head start in being cool in America. You know,
well, yeah. Hasbro even gave the original Cobra figure an AK.
Yep.
There you go.
And you know what? Now that I think about it, remember Intertech? Intertech didn't make an AK, yes. Did they?
The look, the feel, the sound, the real.
The AK Centerfire, automatic water weapon, batteries not included, with up to 30 feet of firing power, an extra clip for reloading, a shoulder strap for moving out. There's also the M16 rifle, the sidekick pistol, the RPG rocket water launcher, the AK Centerfire.
The look, the feel, the sound, so real.
I don't know. I don't know. You have to look that up.
Little kids in the 80s were not playing with AKs, bro. That was a bad guy's gun.
Yeah. But there's more than just the difference between the guns. There's a difference. There's a real difference in the communities, too. The AR, the AK community, the personalities, there's a big difference. I have to say, I really love them both. I love the gun community, and you know, everyone in the community who knows me knows that. But AK guys know how to party. I'm not gonna lie. Go watch Brandon Herrera's AK versus AR guy videos.
Okay.
I'm probably gonna get in trouble for saying this, but there's so much truth in it. While he's just being funny and he means no one any disrespect, Brandon's a really great guy, but there's so much truth to it, and that's why it's funny. And those AK versus AR guy videos that he put up on YouTube, I mean, I still watch, like, I cycle through them like once a week. They crack me up and put me in a great mood. But yeah, AK guys really know how to party big time.
It's funny because only the truth is funny. Like, there has to be an element of truth to it to make it funny. Otherwise, it's just going to fall flat if you're just making stuff up. So, yeah, if your feelings got hurt, too bad.
Yeah. Well, if your feelings get hurt by Brandon Herrera, like, you just don't watch him because the thing is, like, he's so funny. He's got such a great personality. He's got such a great sense of humor that, like, if you're going to be offended by something he says, you're just in the wrong place. You know, see yourself out. But you know, by the way, did you know he's running for Congress?
Yes,
yeah, I saw that.
That's huge. You know, I wish him the best of luck. I think he's got a set on him though for doing that. That's the, you know,
yeah. Yeah, he's definitely going to have a bullseye on his back with a lot of the people currently in office.
Yeah. And you know, like, and you know, he says in his videos, he's like, I'm not going to stop swearing in my videos. I'm not going to change who I am. And I absolutely believe him 100%. That's just not the guy he is. So it's just interesting. Like, you know, the AK guy in Congress, I'd love to see it. Nothing would make me happier.
I would love to see him push back on some of that stuff when they start testifying and some of these people are just coming out of the wrong end of their digestive system with the things they say. Yeah, I would love for Brandon to be in the room and set the record straight on a lot of that stuff.
Oh, God. I mean, I can just see him calling someone an idiot, though, like on the floor. Like, yeah. Have you seen the memes going around, like, I guess it's X now, but Twitter, X, whatever. Going around like with the red circle around the forward assist on the AR-15, and there people are spreading things like jokingly saying, you know, this pushes another bullet in the chamber, makes it twice as powerful, and they're just trying to get the left to pick up on it and start repeating it because it just, they're so good at looking stupid that like we've started to encourage them now.
In Mogadishu, they thought it was a sniper button that hit that and it increases the power. Yeah.
Oh no. Oh God. Yeah. In Mogadishu, that just shows you the company that you know sort of the left is in right now.
Yeah. How about it? Although it's funny to me because, you know, in that left-right paradigm, the AK is the only thing communism ever actually produced, and it's the one thing the American left hates.
Sure. Yeah. You know, of course, I mean, out the American left hates everything. But yes, yeah, that's right. Very true. That's very true. But you know, I honestly, I before I worked at Arsenal Inc., I did work for a really great company in Wyoming called RTG Parts. And RTG, you know, they carry like thousands of SKUs on the shelf in stock, and you know, and as well as like all kinds of crazy hard to find surplus from all over the world. But, you know, they were very well known for, you know, in the AK world, as well as the HK world. And so that was kind of, you know, I mean, I'd been around AKs and ARs and this and that, but that was my first sort of experience in a place where they really favored the AK. And, you know, I came in just sort of like wanting to absorb all the information, and I did. And honestly, I came out of it really, really loving the platform. I think it's a really great gun if you can get a good one.
So what are your thoughts on, because I've made the argument that AKs should not be as expensive as they are right now. You've gotten into this American-made artisanal AK that's $1,500, $1,600. And I'm showing my age, but I remember when AKs were being imported into this country and you couldn't sell them at $200 because nobody wanted them. You know, and granted, those have been bastardized with like aftermarket single stack mags, and the magwells have been modified and all kinds of crap have gone on for compliance reasons. And then we started getting decent AKs that came in with their proper double stack mags and original magwells and all those things. So what are your thoughts on that? Like what's a reasonable price point on a good AK, and two, should there be a $2,000 AK?
I mean, look, anyone can build anything expensive. The more you throw at it, whether it's actual functional accessories, or whether you're doing things, you know, more for aesthetics. But I think what you're asking me is like, you know, an AK in general, your solid go-to quintessential AK-47. Again, another thing I'll probably get in trouble for, but like $800. Something like that, $800-$900, maybe $1,000. That's it. I can tell you, without naming names, although it's gonna, you know, whatever.
It's a thin veil, but go ahead. Don't name names.
Yeah. I can tell you the AKs are being made overseas in Eastern Bloc countries for extremely affordable prices. They are purchased for extremely affordable prices. Imported here and, you know, controlled in a way to artificially inflate the prices. And there's been a lot of things that have been done to artificially inflate those prices. And, you know, I have witnessed it personally. I've even witnessed someone say that it's their goal to make sure that the AK in general doesn't sell for less than, you know, $2,800, $3,000. And, you know, it's difficult to listen to that, because, you know, when you know how much, you know, how much we're paying for them overseas. And sure, in recent years, certain costs have gone up. Importation, you know, transport costs, everything like that, freight costs. They have driven prices up, but not to the prices that you're seeing here right now. Right. And that, in my opinion, that's a tragedy. I think that there are some really good American companies out there who, as they sort of cut their teeth on the platform and do more and more with it, they're getting better and better. And I'm going to go ahead and name one: Palmetto State Armory. Okay. Mm-hmm. They are a company who everything that they do, they strive in a very honest way to get better and better and better at it, because it's literally their goal to help us as Americans exercise our Second Amendment rights, and do so in a way that's accessible and affordable. And I have to commend them as a company. And I know a lot of people who work there, and they're all really great people. So I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's going to be difficult in the future, you know, for guys who are trying to artificially inflate those prices to, you know, ultimately compete. But there will always be your sort of like your, you know, like your AR guys who are like, you know, I'm only going to buy a Knights Armament or an original Colt or whatever. There's always going to be your AK guys too that are like, I'll never buy anything that's not an import. But, you know, in general, I think, you know, there's some American companies who are working really hard and getting a lot better at it, and they will eventually make the market very difficult for those expensive guys.
I think, yeah, and I've seen that trend where, you know, for a long time it was don't buy an American AK, right? Mm-hmm. If it was assembled in the U.S., you're not going to be happy with it. And that was some of the early ones out of Palmetto. Some of the early NPAPs and ZPAPs and all those things were iffy at best, and had very short lifespans. You know, within 2,000 rounds, 3,000 rounds, you'd see major component failures in the bolt, the trunnion, particularly in the rear end of the rifle, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of that stuff was just breaking under stress for whatever reason. And again, I'm no expert on it like you are, but I dabble, right? So,
I appreciate being called an expert. That's really nice of you. I don't consider myself. Thank you.
Well, you're at least further down the rabbit hole on 8Ks than I am. So, you know, game recognizes game. So we've seen that trend kind of move the other way with more and more manufacturers getting into it and dabbling with it. And even some of the homebrew stuff, like guys are making them at home and getting good results out of it.
Yeah.
There was a video.
That's impressive.
2 years ago where somebody made one out of a shovel. You know the one I'm talking about?
I think I've heard of that. I recall seeing something.
And like the gun ran. I don't know how long, but the gun ran. So
yeah.
there's something to be said. Like
wait. You said he made an AK out of a shovel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like left the handle on as the stock. That was the funniest part. I guess it was something based on a video game and he wanted to see if it was actually possible. And worked up a scoop shovel so it would be a legit AK receiver and then shot it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, have you seen Prince Shoot Repeat on YouTube?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
He's I think, 3D printed, you know, his own AK before.
PLAK?
Yeah. Yeah. He's hilarious. Name. Do you remember when he came out with that HK Slap music video?
Yes.
I swear to God, I watched that video like it must have been 500 times. And I used to play it like all day long at the office when I worked at RTG Parts.
Nice.
And like, I would open my, you know, like I'd be open to the warehouse and everyone would be like, because we had so many HKs there and we had MP5s everywhere. And, you know, and so it was like we'd be dancing around the warehouse, you know, doing the HK Slap. It was just, you know, that made me fall in love with that channel. That guy's so clever.
There's a lot of stuff coming out of that 3D print world that is really interesting at this point. And I think probably both the cutting edge and the best anchor in Liberty that we have at this point in the firearms world.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the left now hates 3D printers. So,
right. We were just talking about that not long ago, that New York is, because we're Pennsylvania, New Jersey, so New York is right around the corner. They're trying to require a NICS check to buy a 3D printer.
Oh gosh, that's so ridiculous. But you know, most of this stuff is really that we deal with here is really ridiculous. Like you know, especially like the NFA. Like I'm a guy like I have tinnitus in both ears. It's really bad. I try to suppress everything. Given there's the cool factor and that doesn't escape me. And I do love that, but you know, it's also, I'm trying to maintain whatever I have, hearing I have left. And you know, I really don't think I should have to wait a year for a suppressor, you know, and I actually had this conversation with the ATF at the last SHOT Show. And he said, well, the guy told me, he goes, well, you don't have to go shoot guns. I said, well, you don't have to eat at that restaurant either, but they still have to build a ramp and they can't, you know, charge you $200 to do it and make you wait a year to do it. They'll get fined.
Correct.
You know, so go figure. At that point, he's like, well, we're not having this conversation anymore. I'm like, oh, is that the signal for you win the debate? I'm like, thank you.
Yeah. No, there's no point in talking to those zombies anyway.
Yeah.
The hell with every last one of them. it's one of those arguments I like to push back on. One of the first articles I wrote when I started my website back in 2011, and this is a conversation that for whatever reason keeps coming back around every few years, is they go, oh, well, we need to treat guns more like cars and require licensing and blah, 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 blah. And that ties right to it. I'm going, yeah, great. Every car in this country is required to have a muffler. So require every firearm in this country to have a suppressor and stop charging a $200 tax stamp. Make it standard equipment on every firearm that's sold, and there is no longer a debate.
Yeah,
everybody gets a suppressor. Shut up.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you know, the cat's really out of the bag. Everyone knows, you know, what the NFA process is. You submit your application. It sits on a desk, and you know, one by one, they slowly run a NICS check, just like how you run a NICS check. When you go buy a gun and get an instant approval, you know, at your gun store. So there's nothing really extra that's going on there when you buy an NFA item. It's just, you know, it's literally there simply to discourage you and obstruct you from, you know, getting the things you want. And it can make life, you know, really, really difficult. You know, what if you have a couple suppressors? What if you have a couple suppressors, you know, that are in jail and you get a job offer and you have to move? And, oh, you know, what do you do?
Right.
you know, ask me how I know, you know, it's happened to me. So, it's really, you know, and they always say, you know, the guy also, when I complained about it, he told me, well, you know, if you guys wouldn't call the ATF hotline all the time and ask for updates, that would, you know, make things more efficient. And I said, oh, you want to talk about efficiency? Well, you know, as the U.S. government, don't you think you should maybe, lead by example? And, you know, what do you mean? I said, well, if I get approved for an NFA item, you know, one day, why can't I be approved for the next 6 months or the next 12 months? Why do I have to go through this application and this wait every single time? That seems highly, right. That seems way more inefficient than having someone answer a phone. So why don't you lead by example? You know, when I got to that, the answer I got was, oh, we're not having this conversation. I'm like, oh, there we go again.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They just shut down. Yeah, well, listen, they're morally bankrupt people who've gone into a morally bankrupt career, and there's just no two ways about it. I don't care. It's the one profession where I can honestly say I don't believe there's any good people there. I don't think there's anybody working at ATF who has any redeeming qualities.
Well, if there is, I certainly hope they come out and whistleblow on their on their agency. That would at least tell me there's one person, but I don't see anyone doing that, and it's unfortunate. You know?
No, I don't expect it to happen at any point. And we had one a couple of months ago, or maybe a year ago, where somebody was like, oh, well, my source inside the ATF. And I'm like, if you have a source inside the ATF that doesn't lend credibility to your argument, that makes you fucking suspect.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's an interesting argument too is, so a lot of us, like I have a CCW. So, I can skip my NICS checks and, you know, and that's nice. That's great. And to get a CCW, you know, you have to go through this vetting process, which does take law enforcement, you know, a certain amount of time, depending on how, you know, encumbered they are and you know, how backed up they are. So I can literally go and buy a firearm with no background check, brand new from a store, because I've been vetted and I have a CCW, but I can't buy a muffler.
You can't buy the accessory. Right.
Yeah. That's insane. That's insane. I can buy a firearm and not get NICS checked. Approved.
Right.
But not a muffler.
Quick question. So since you have your CCW, that's the concealed carry permit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That means that now you don't have to take your NICS check every time you buy one now?
That's right. It depends on the state you're in. So,
okay.
So like I know that when I was in Wyoming, that's how it was. Now I'm here in Nevada and it's the same way. If you're vetted enough to get your CCW, you go into a store, you fill out a 4473, just like you would normally do to purchase a firearm. Right. The only thing, once it's filled out and they got all the paperwork and they do the copy of your driver's license and your CCW and all that stuff, they here you go, sir, here's your gun. And that's it. You don't have to, wait for approval or anything like that. So, that was really cool in Wyoming and here in Nevada. And, so it's crazy. So why can't I get the muffler? It defies logic, but I don't think it was ever meant to be, have anything to do with logic. It was, correct. Like I said, it's meant to discourage and obstruct.
Absolutely. Logic has no place in the conversation. That was not the intent. It's not a flaw. It's a feature that's really, it's designed that way. So that's, yeah, it's not a mistake. And it's the same thing where Max is in New Jersey, that anytime he does anything, he has to go get fingerprinted again.
Really? Even to buy a gun?
Well, no. Once he's got his initial permit, he doesn't have to do that again. But if he moves and needs to change the address on his permit, he has to get fingerprinted again.
Oh my gosh. But it's
a digital fingerprint system. So his fingerprints are in a digital system. Why do I have to submit my fingerprints a second time if you have a digital copy of them?
Oh, we're going to get into a conversation about efficiency again.
Right. Again, something that has no place in government.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. Like if you've ever walked into a DMV.
Right.
Yeah. Although I will say this, and the people in Wyoming will absolutely be so mad at me for saying nice things about Wyoming. They specifically told me not to, but walking into a DMV, like where I lived in Wyoming, I mean, it was a small county of 18,000 people. You walk into the DMV and there's like a couple desks there and just people sitting there, hey, come on up, let me help you. And you're in and out in like 5 minutes. And it's just, it's a trip. Because before Wyoming, I actually lived in Los Angeles for many years. Right. And oh gosh, I don't even like saying that. It has a weird taste on my tongue.
I can edit that out if you want.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. You know, I actually, my wife divorced me for wanting to move out of California. Would you believe that? I got divorced because she's like, I will never leave Southern California. And I just wanted to leave so bad. And I brought it up too many times and she divorced me. Crazy.
Listen, man, she belongs to California then.
She does. That's it.
She made her choice.
Yeah,
it was you or California, and she chose California. So,
yeah, that's it's a weird choice, but you know, okay, you know, whatever. So, but for me, luckily, it's been really easy, and you know, I've been doing a lot more traveling than originally I'd planned to when I started working at Battle Arms. But next week heading out to SWAT Roundup in Orlando. So that's going to be a lot of fun, hanging out with a lot of LE guys. And, I always enjoy that crowd.
ATF comes over and you're like, no, none for you.
You know, it is really hard. You know, the ATF and the FBI in, you know, recent years has been so, you know, divisive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is really hard in my position to try to maintain those relationships and be nice to everyone when you really want to tell them, hey, guys, you know, what the hell? You know, so that's difficult. But typically, you know, your local PD guys and your sheriff's departments, those guys are always fun to work with. You know, we really like them a lot, especially where we are. We're located in Henderson, Nevada. We do a lot of work with the Henderson PD, and I can't tell you, you know, just what a great group of guys they are.
How about a coupon code?
Just going to ask what you got up your alley, sir. Usually I do the wonderful segue, but you have beat me to the punch this time.
No, I just took a cheap shot at you. Yeah, I figured I'd make you do the coupon code this time. Do you remember what it is?
Well, for Stuff and Things, I believe it's Black Bag. No, it's New to Pew. Oh, wait,
there you
I'm
go.
Sorry. I don't remember. You take it over. I'll cue the music right here. You can save the day again.
No, keep all of that in because that was great.
Fine. You got it.
So you're going to go to our sponsor's website, stinkusa.com, STINCUSA.com, and use coupon code NEW2PEW and get 10% off site-wide. And then maybe the next time we have Darwin on, we'll be set up to have a coupon code for Battle Arms Development.
You will. I promise. Do you know about my coupon code debacle right now?
No.
Okay, so we're putting some money and some effort into a new website and some new software and some updates because there are some simple functions that we currently, our website has absolutely just crapped the bed on us. And one of those functions is the ability to accept the coupon code. In fact, I can't even get the screen, you know, that the little box to nice. Pop up during checkout. And it's literally the bane of my existence. But I'll tell you what, if you want to give people my email address,
go ahead.
I have the worst email address in the world. Like you should never make my email address my first initial and last name, because especially when the domain is at battlearmsdevelopment.com, because it becomes really long. But anyway, you can reach me at DNERCESIAN at battlearmsdevelopment.com, at DNERCESIAN at battlearmsdevelopment.com. And if you do that and you say that you listen to this show, what the heck? Let's call it 15% off on your next order.
Nice.
Watch out. Give it up.
Anyone who says they heard this, and so the great thing is, at any time, you know, you send me an email, you say you heard us talking, and new to pew. You know, sometimes that's hard to say. New to pew podcast.
It just rolls off your tongue sometimes. You got to practice it.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. And I will give you 15% off. But not you distributors out there. If you're a distributor and you're getting distributor prices, don't email me asking for 15% more off. But
no double dipping, you greedy sons of bitches.
No, they're great. They're great. But yeah, absolutely. If anyone sends me an email or, you know, gives us a call and gets me on the phone and says, hey, new to Pew podcast, I got their back. 15% off your next order.